Greetings and welcome on board WDKOK Sunrise. I'm Mark Lawrence. So we have on the news line now an acquaintance we have turned to a number of times in the past to talk about LGBTQ topics and adolescence and family issues and counseling and why folks seek out therapy. In the past year, I've probably interviewed her. This is probably the fourth time within 1 year because we rely on Susan Decker for just great information about what's happening in the counseling field and what people are doing and what the trends are. She is a licensed professional counselor at Family Practice Center. Thank you so much, Susan, for granting us this time.
You're welcome, Mark.
Tell me about this level of work that you and your peers have now, the additional people seeking counseling.
Well, this year was definitely a record year for me and for my colleagues. A lot of people seeking counseling to the point where we can't meet the demand. A lot of that has to do with, obviously, with the pandemic, we saw certain trends. Now we're opening up again, so we're seeing a little bit different trends. But there's definitely been a greater need this year. And I think we can place it squarely on the pandemic and also the political culture. So that was all kind of tied together.
Well, this the pandemic, we'll get to that in a moment, but this political culture, this abyss and division that we have in the U.S., it's so vitriolic and people are so divided. In what way does that wear on us, or what impact does that have?
Well, it tends to create a lot of anxiety for people who are maybe afraid that the other party is going in the wrong direction and they're worried about it. It also causes a lot of family issues. So maybe people in the same family disagree on it politically, and because, like you said, it was so divided this year, those divisions in families were more pronounced as well. And so that was some of the themes that I know in here.
Well, let me ask you to just put your U.S. citizen hat on for a moment. Is there something we can do to help this country?
Well, one of the things I teach is, if I'm working with a family, one of the things I talk about is trying to get to what that feeling is underneath the argument. So if you're arguing about different political beliefs, you know, we can always try to do a little compassionate listening. And what is it that the other person is fearing? And is that maybe some of the same things you fear? And so sometimes when I work with families, we try to get a little bit underneath what the original argument is. And sometimes that goes a long way. And I'm sure we could do that on a national level better than we've been doing as well.
Well, we're going to have to employ you to get this nation glued back together again, but we'll have to save that for another program because it sounds like we got some deep issues to dig into there. We will. Okay, so all the way back around to the pandemic, give us a glimpse of who's seeking counseling and the themes that they present.
As far as our data is just coming in. So if we want to rely on research, some of our data is just coming in, so we don't have all those numbers that we need. We do have some numbers. We know that with the pandemic, depression and anxiety were up about 30%. ER visits for drug overdoses were up 36%. So we do know the most recent information that I got, that suicide attempts were up, but completed suicides did not rise. So we'll see how that shakes out with some of the data that we get now that we're coming out the other end of the pandemic. What happened with therapists is we already had a shortage of providers, and I include therapists, but it also means psychiatry, case managers. We already had a shortage, so when the pandemic hit, it just kind of exacerbated that problem. We also a lot of providers went to strictly telehealth, which maybe made it more available for some people, but also maybe wasn't for everybody. So there was a little bit of that. I think I mentioned that some of the insurances waived copays and deductibles, so it made therapy a little bit more financially available than it has been in the past to some folks. So that increased a little bit of a little bit of our the people that could seek therapy.
So for those folks that are presenting to you, was there a through line or some commonality for the symptoms that they presented, whether it was depression or anxiety? What kind of trends were there in terms of what you saw?
Well, it was interesting because I was tracking it a little bit when it first started because I thought it was kind of going to be an interesting experiment since I haven't been a therapist in a pandemic before. And one of the things I noticed is initially a lot of people presented with a lot of anxiety. And it was fear of maybe losing a job. What about their kids? How are the kids going to do with school? Sometimes a lot of it was the fear of the disease itself. And then as we kind of moved through the pandemic, it moved into a little bit more of depression and some family issues because the pandemic presented huge stressors on families. So those families that had young kids at home and maybe didn't have anybody to care for their kids or the schools were closed and then they were open, it created a lot of stress because somebody had to stay home with kids. In the families with older adolescents, you had the problem of maybe not being your most motivated in adolescence anyway, and now you have to do all your work online. And so a lot of times that didn't happen if mom and dad weren't home to kind of monitor that. And kids got overwhelmed pretty quickly. They realized, okay, I didn't do any work last week or the week before, and now I'm really behind. And that created a lot of family issues. So we're still seeing a lot of fallout from that. And I'm sure schools, I'm sure people who are listening would definitely agree that the schools really struggled with that as well.
So you have these families that are all wound up because of these issues. What is some sound information you can pass along to families that might still be experiencing that or that you know, the next time they get into some sort of a comparable situation, they'll have something in their tool belt to help?
Well, one of the things I've worked with a lot of adolescents who maybe were pretty good students, but when they went online, they maybe didn't do the work. And so I've had quite a few adolescents fail, and parents were very upset about that. One of the things I try to explain is even though you failed 1 year, next year things will be pretty much back to normal. You go back, you start over. And even for the adolescents who are looking back and thinking, oh, no, I really messed up, 1 year does not predict the rest of your future. And so able to say, okay, what did you learn from this mistake, and how do we move on from here? Same with families, you know, okay, this has happened. How do we move on from here? How do we give your kid the resources they need? And schools around here are doing a pretty good job. I know they're offering a lot of summer school classes this year. And, you know, they're dealing with that as well. So one of the things I try to do with people is, okay, yeah, it was a rough year, it was a mistake, but it is not going to predict your future unless you let it.
And is there some sort of a recipe for a smoother dynamic in a family? I know, like in a business here, we'll look carefully at all of our processes and personnel and product in order to try to come up with solutions to things that we would identify as an issue. Within a family, is there an examination that you can go through, a sort of a look-see to see what's happening?
Well, one of the things I noticed with a lot of families, and not that I'm faulting families because families have a lot of stressors, but communication is a big key. Are you talking to your kids? Are your kids talking to you? Are you able to talk in a way that makes it likely that you're heard? Are you able to speak in a way that is going to make it likely that you're heard in your family? And so teaching communication skills is a big part of when I work with families, finding out if a kid's not motivated to go to school, there can be a multiple reasons, and figuring out what's going on and then how to kind of build those baby steps. So it might be too overwhelming to say, okay, you have to get all this work done for this class, but maybe sometimes breaking things down so that they're in a little bit more small, manageable task.
So maybe that lack of motivation isn't a disease, so to speak. It's a symptom, and something else is happening, and you try to get at the heart of that matter. Well, as you dug into the heart of the matters, can you tell us about any sort of revelations or any discoveries that you made that really helped you in your work?
Well, I love working with my adolescents because they're kind of deep souls. So I always really like that. One of the things I noticed is a lot of my adolescents, one of the things that would happen is they got overwhelmed. They got too far behind. And so a lot of times we had to help prioritize, okay, yeah, you're not going to pass all this stuff, but what can you pass and how can we prioritize that for you? And so maybe picking two or three classes and seeing if we can get caught up in those, and maybe you can take the other two in the summer or whatever. So being overwhelmed is one. But you know, an interesting thing that I saw a lot is a lot of adolescents felt that the world was in such bad shape, and I blame a lot of this on the media, but they felt that the world was in such a bad place, it was all pretty hopeless. And so why bother doing any of this stuff, because the world is in a bad place? And so we're able to, sometimes we have to challenge that. Okay, this is what you're hearing on your social media, this is what you see, but what in what ways is the world in good shape? And so I always work with my women. Women today are in a little bit better shape than we were 50 years ago. And so being able to say, hey, we have had some things are better for some of us, and getting kids to maybe talk to grandparents or whatever so that they can see that, yeah, there are a lot of things we're unhappy with now today, but there are some ways things are a little bit better for me today. So we were able to work through some of those things. But that was a theme I saw come up quite often. And that was with my adolescents and young adults as well.
With the bulk of the pandemic seeming to be behind us, what is the lingering effect, the lingering fatigue, this strangeness to go out into the world without a mask? Sort of explain what's happening now.
Well, everybody's regrouping a little bit. So some people are happy to be back out. Some people have liked some of the things about the pandemic. So some people like, even though we couldn't go out, it also limited how we had to spend our time, so we didn't have as many options, and so people are starting to deal with that again. Maybe they're expected to be at several events. Some people are having to go back in to work in the office, and some people really liked working from home, and they enjoyed that. So there's a little bit of change there. Some people are not going back into the office, although they thought they were going to, and that's been a bit of a transition because maybe they liked being at the workplace. So there's a little bit of that. Schools, of course, are playing a lot of catch up, hoping for next year to be a bit better year. A lot of people are getting vaccinated, so that's been opening up things for people as well. But getting together with family is wonderful, but it also sometimes causes some issues. So those are some of the things we're seeing again as things kind of open up a little bit. Also, some people have different ideas about how safe we are or how safe we aren't. And so that can be a bit of a concern as well.
Is there some anxiety associated with the vaccination process? Some people choose to do it, some do not. Does that tension kind of weigh on people's minds if you feel one way or the other about it?
Well, and I think it creates sometimes a lot of, if you feel strongly one way, sometimes it creates some anger at people who feel differently. And so that can create a little bit of an issue, whether it's in the workplace, maybe your coworker didn't get vaccinated and you thought they should have, or so there's a little bit of that too.
You always have information for folks when I talk to you. You know, what can I do? If I'm feeling overwhelmed or unusual or strange to be back in the workplace, what can I do? Advice, or not advice, but more information for people.
Well, one of the things is definitely to normalize this for yourself. This was a very, very different year. And now we're kind of moving back into some sense of normalcy. It's going to feel abnormal because we got pretty used to living our pandemic lifestyle. And now that transition can feel not normal. And some people can misunderstand that anxiety is more pathological, where a lot of times it's just part of that transition back. If you haven't been social and you tend to have a lot of social anxiety, it might feel even harder now, because unfortunately you weren't working through any of that social anxiety this past year because you didn't have to go anywhere or see anybody. And so sometimes that's part of it, is you might have taken a few steps back and you might have to work on that a little bit harder. But I like to just normalize, hey, this was a crazy year. And for my families, hey, you got through it. That's a big thing. Let's just start where we're at and see how we can go forward.
And some additional remarks about the pandemic and its impact on mental health. I have some other questions to ask, but this will be my last question related to the winding down of the pandemic.
Well, one of the things I definitely want to touch base on is our health care providers. I think our health care providers have really suffered this year, whether it was having to work, whether it was having to redeploy, also witnessing a lot of death, and also just the physical fatigue of caring for people with COVID. So we had a lot of people that were our healthcare workers providing care for COVID. It didn't mean just providing care, because people couldn't have their family members in. You were also, to them, their only resource for comfort. And that took a lot out of a lot of our healthcare workers. And so that's one area I just feel like is healthcare workers, I think, are going to have some prolonged effects from the pandemic.
And is there anything someone should watch out for if they're concerned that they may have a lingering impact? I mean, at the most extreme, you have, you know, PTSD that would be experienced, but some of it is, you know, it's either a discomfort or anxiety. Anything to watch out for?
If you're feeling that depression and that fatigue, and it is relentless, and it's not getting any better. Same with some of the ruminating on what this year was like for you. It's probably time to seek some professional help. The other thing is you had to really watch with substance use. Substances provide relief, and so people are very attracted to them, but they are also very progressive. And so if you are noticing that you are using more alcohol or more drugs than you usually do, it's probably time to seek some help, because it usually only goes in one direction.
We happen to be speaking at the early part of June. It is Pride Month, and you and I have spoken in the past about some of the mental health aspects that relate to the LGBTQ community. Can you tell us why is that always an important component of any conversation about that community that we talk about mental health?
Well, I think the LGBT community has historically been rejected by society and sometimes by their family members, and so they've always maybe seek out a little bit more support professionally because they haven't always had that support. And depending on where you live and who you surround yourself with, even today you can find yourself in a very highly rejecting community. Maybe it's your church, maybe it's your family, and so that's always a big stressor on the LGBT community. One of the things I always go back to is the correlation with higher substance abuse and higher suicide rates. It directly correlates with the level of family rejection. And so I always talk, when I work with families, I always talk with them about that rejection from the family is huge. And so even if somebody is moderately rejecting versus highly rejecting, it makes a big difference in those substance abuse and suicide rates.
So no matter what, make sure your kids know they are loved.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
How do you communicate that if maybe you have difficulty communicating it?
Well, some of my families do a good job. They may not be okay with somebody being gay or trans, and particularly their child, but at the same time they can communicate love and they say, look, I'll always love you. People struggle with that though, because it's hard to feel loved by somebody who rejects a big piece of yourself. And so working through that, and that's also not always a linear process. And so there's a big spectrum there. And so the family that maybe is highly rejecting at one time is maybe not very highly rejecting 5 years down the road. And so there's a lot of fluidity there. And so I usually try to open that door to that fluidity and say, hey, here's how we feel today. Might that change? Yeah, it might change. We'll see how, you know, and when I work with trans people in the LGBT community, I remind them that most parents tend to come around eventually. Not all, but most parents tend to come around eventually. And so that's sometimes that sense of urgency to be accepted right now, today, can lessen a little bit.
How can we be helpful to adolescents who may be struggling with this, or just young people of any particular age if they're struggling with this, this idea that the community has them set aside as something that is other?
Well, I think our community is doing some things right. There are certainly some rec centers. There's some areas where they'll have a flag up or something that shows that they are welcoming, so kids can, or people can just see, a symbol that, oh, we are open to wherever you are on the spectrum. So that's helpful. So they're finding safe zones. Schools have done a pretty good job with that. A lot of the schools are doing a pretty good job with that. Kids, at least if they have somewhere to go or somewhere where they feel accepted, that goes a long way.
Anything else to add about any of our topics? Something I didn't ask a question that would elicit something you wish to say.
I think one of the things I just wanted to touch on was healthcare workers, since I just thought they had such a hard time. My heart went out to them so much this year. I thought they really was a hard time. The other thing to remember is that the substance abuse was really bad this year. So opioid overdoses were way up. That is not over yet. That's going to be a fight. We're going to be fighting for a long time, whether providing resources or finding better resources for those people.